Tonight, I want to talk about appreciation for goodness. I've been teaching a 8-week series on different ways to cultivate contentment and bringing some of those teachings here. And if you've been here with me for some of these in recent weeks, we've talked about talked about appreciation for goodness in a couple of different ways already. One is noticing with your mindfulness practice, noticing the good things that arise, sun on the face, that just arise in a moment, the taste of fruit, the support of the chair beneath your body. And really savoring those. And they're called glimmers, these things, they come and go, and bringing them into awareness and allowing them to nourish you. And we also talked about beginning to know what you love and prioritizing that, bringing it more into your life. So tonight I want to talk about appreciating goodness, and a main word we use for that is gratitude. And when we practice this appreciation for goodness or gratitude, there's a notable increase of inner ease or contentment. And that shows up in brain scans and in studies of physical health and relational well-being. It shows up in all the different kinds of studies that are being done now. The contentment that comes from a deliberate and intentional practice of appreciating the good makes a big difference. The contentment really does nourish us. What I want to bring, a quote that I learned from James Barras. I think it's in his book. I'm pretty sure it's in his book, Awakening Joy, from the cartoon Ziggy, who said, "We can be angry that roses have thorns or celebrate that thorns have roses." And I've always liked that quote a lot, but I've come to realize it's really a deep teaching. It's really deep, because what it's saying is both are always there. The thorns are not going away. And the roses are there too. They're both always there. And this is the Buddhist teaching, the truth of dukkha, that no matter what we do, no matter how blessed we are or privileged, no matter what kind of machinations we go through, no matter what practices we do, thorns will be there, sorrows will be there. And so the question isn't this idea of, this imagining that we can do with our thinking minds of making life all roses. It's not that. But it's also acknowledging the roses and letting them nourish us. We're literally refueled by the good. The good in our life supports our resilience, and our resilience helps us recover more quickly from our difficulties, our inevitable thorns. We're not practicing so that everything will be good. We're practicing as a critical tool for navigating life. In our culture, and this is, our cultures are born out of long histories and the natural negativity bias of the brain, that's in all cultures. In Western culture, we tend to not prioritize or savor the good things in our lives. We can have guilt about it, or we can be prioritizing busyness. So we tend to not prioritize or savor, and so we don't get refueled. And then furthermore, when the challenges or the thorns are, the predominant experience in a moment or series of moments, we tend to not practice compassion, which is another very profound and central Buddhist teaching. We tend to not practice compassion, but rather going to blame and shame. And so what we're doing here when we're within these practices, whether we're working on practicing loving awareness or mindfulness, where we're allowing ourselves to come into the present and be with what is rather than with all the regrets and worries, coming into the present, or we're practicing compassion, where we're learning how to meet difficulty of all kinds within ourselves, within others in the world, with care rather than with fear or resentment. And then this third one, learning to turn toward and meet the good things with joy and appreciation, rather than with, being kind of caught in the trance of our worries or, you know, feeling like we cannot allow ourselves joy for any of a number of reasons that we explored the last time we were here. There's a Finnish proverb that says, there's no such thing as bad weather, only inappropriate clothing. And I think what we learn in Buddhist practice is, what's the appropriate clothing for life? Like, what helps us move through life on life's terms, roses and thorns, in such a way that we are, we're well prepared for it. And these are the practices that allow us that. Present moment awareness, joy, and compassion. And so just one last thing about the joy or the gratitude, and then we'll spend the rest of the time on this appreciation of goodness. Many of us know that the Buddha taught that really at the source of suffering is craving, which is this pushing away of the difficult and this grasping on to the good. I like this. I want it to continue. I don't like that. I want it to go away. No, instead, what we're learning is we ride with life. We ride with the truth of impermanence. With presence and wisdom, we respond with compassion when things are hard and with appreciation when things are good. And appreciation is a portal into receiving the nourishment of joy. So I want to read you a little story that speaks to like the cohabitation of roses and thorns and learning to practice appreciation in the midst of it. This comes from the book, How We Choose to Be Happy, which was James's text for his Awakening Joy class before he wrote his own book. And what happened was these two guys, Rick Foster and Greg Hicks, took a year off of their work and went traveling around and took out ads in papers. This was in the 90s. And they went traveling around interviewing people who self-identified as extremely happy. And they found some common themes. And one of them is people who consider themselves extremely happy practice appreciation. That was a similar result to work years later that sociologist Brené Brown did. She also interviewed hundreds and hundreds of people who self-identified as happy, and they all had a conscious gratitude practice. With no exception, in Brené's case, they all had a deliberate gratitude practice. So beginning to see appreciation for goodness as a practice that we deliberately do, we have to deliberately do it because our brains aren't wired that way organically. Usually, unless we happen to grow up in a situation where we cultivated appreciation young, where our brains default to the negativity bias, default to looking for what's wrong, what needs to be fixed, you know, where the danger and the trouble lies. And that kept our species alive, but doesn't serve happiness. So we can practice appreciating the good as a deliberate thing we do each day in the similar way that we do our mindfulness or our loving kindness practices. So this is just a little story from How We Choose to Be Happy that speaks to this. It's called The Traffic Jam. During a workshop in California, Josh was struggling with the entire notion of appreciation, particularly with the idea that there's always something to appreciate in the moment. He challenged us with, okay, then how do you appreciate a traffic jam? We responded with a challenge of our own and a homework assignment. Consider your appreciation possibilities the next time you're stuck in traffic. Then get back to us. A chemist, Josh reported back in the form of a time-based scientific analysis. I spent years cursing my miserable commute each morning. It turns out to have been a total waste of time. I found an answer to your question. Now, instead of the 20-minute drive from hell, I spend 20 minutes thinking about and appreciating all the marvel of my life. I'm in love with the woman of my dreams. I've been improving my relationships with my family. I'm taking much better care of my body. I'm doing yoga twice a week. I live close to beautiful trails. I made some calculations. If I add up all my commute time over the next 15 years, I can spend more than 2,600 hours being angry at the world or appreciating it. I've made my choice. So, but that wasn't coming naturally. What was coming naturally was just irritation and frustration, which is normal. You know, we all get irritated with traffic. That's not, we all familiar with that. Traffic's no fun. So kind of left to the mind, left to its own devices, kind of can run negative. But when we are deliberately bringing in an appreciation for the good, it actually changes the chemistry of our brain and nervous system. It actually is a process of uplift and deepening contentment and well-being. Thich Nhat Hanh said, "The ocean of suffering is immense, but if you turn around, you can see the land. The seed of suffering in you may be strong, but don't wait until you have no more suffering before allowing yourself to be happy." That's really important because we all suffer, and the causes of suffering are going to continue to arise. They can coexist, and we can be supported and nourished and replenished by our appreciation for the good. So one of the things that's cool about gratitude or appreciation is that it's supported by mindfulness. Gratitude allows us to notice what's in the present moment and then celebrate it, which is a deliberate override of another thing that the brain has developed over many thousands of years, which is to prefer novelty. So like I like to think of it like, imagine when washing machines were new, when like washing machine had just been invented. Can you imagine? Like, somehow your family has enough resources to get yourself a washing machine. And part of that, for generations, everybody before that has been hand washing all the clothing. And then washing machines come. I mean, if it were me, I would be doing a huge happy dance every time it was time to put those clothes in the washing machine. Right? But now, you know, If we're fortunate enough to have washing machines, which some of us are, or to have a laundromat nearby, we do our wash and it's just one more boring task and we just don't think a thing about it. And that's how our brains are. But when we're in present moment awareness, it can be laundry day and we turn toward the washing machine and we can truly marvel at how fantastic that is. Like again and again, we can do that, you know, or the warm water when you're doing dishes, the warm water on your hands, or just the fact of indoor plumbing. You know, with present moment awareness, we can begin to like bring these things into consciousness and celebrate them, which is a really beautiful way to kind of change our perspective about our lives and what's going on. Because if we're practicing present moment awareness and gratitude, we are then seeing all these amazing things around us all the time. And that's a really different way to step through a day than taking all these same things for granted and being kind of laser focused on what isn't working. This is a poem from a Buddhist poet and deep ecologist, W.S. Merwin. It's called The Present. As they were leaving the garden, one of the angels bent down to them and whispered, "I am to give you this as you are leaving the garden. I do not know what it is, or what it is for, or what you will do with it. You will not be able to keep it, but you will not be able to keep anything." Yet they both reached at once for the present. And when their hands met, they laughed. When we come into the present moment, it's fleeting, it's impermanent for sure. And yet there are things here that we can really appreciate and be uplifted by. It can be hard to find in some moments. I'm not saying it's always easy, you know, but it can become a practice. And as we make this idea of appreciating the good or gratitude a practice, it moves from a state to a trait. Have you heard that little pith phrase, from a state to a trait? I'd heard it and forgotten, and I just heard it again recently, and I really appreciate it. I really like that. The difference between a state is something that kind of comes and goes. And a trait is something that's become habituated. And the way that we habituate something is just by practicing it a lot. And I'm just going to take a little aside here to talk about practice. The whole notion of practice, whether it's what we're talking about tonight, which is gratitude or appreciation, or it's mindfulness, or it's one of the Brahma Viharas, you know, loving kindness, or self-compassion, even all the practices that we do here in these rooms, in these spaces. Well, when we consider practice, it can be daunting because time is so challenging. With this one, appreciation or gratitude, if you don't, it's really helpful to make it easy and fun. So you can invite yourself to just do like 1 minute a day. I know one woman who, just when she pulls into her driveway at the end of a work day, right in that moment of turning the car into the driveway and pulling in, that's her little time to do gratitude. Take a few moments and appreciate that she's walking into a comfortable home, and appreciate the good things that happened that day. And the whole practice takes 60 seconds, but it has made a huge difference for her in her overall well-being, just that deliberate recalling of the good. And it's become habituated because it's associated with a thing that happens for her 5 days a week, that pulling into the driveway at the end of the workday. So making it easy and fun, and yet doing it, because once we're doing it, then it can move from state to trait, which is what we want to do. The Latin word for gratitude is gratias, and that is also the same root word for the English word grace. And Saint Francis of Assisi taught that grace, good things, nourishing things, are always around us, are always coming toward us, and that gratitude is the practice of making that grace conscious. Now, this language may not work for you, and I totally get that. I respect that. And yet, it's a cool description of what we're doing when we're doing a deliberate gratitude practice, appreciating the good, noticing, you know, why, you know, yes, there's dukkha here, there's pain and suffering, there's no question about that. But we don't want to miss that there's also all this good stuff. And, you know, good stuff can be subtle. One thing that I learned to super duper appreciate is the support of the furniture underneath me, which is why, I mean, I know I'm not at all the only teacher that does this. I think maybe lots do nowadays, but always when I'm teaching, I'm inviting us to notice the, and when I practice, always, I notice the seat beneath my body, wherever I'm sitting, or if I'm lying down, noticing that, and feel that sense of contact. And that has actually over time become a kind of a refuge for me. It's a kind of a deep, silent goodness. It's like, sometimes I think being human in terms of the goodness and the way the negativity bias can block us from perceiving it, sometimes I think being human is sort of like being a colicky baby. Like there's so much stuff that we're struggling with that it's hard to notice the arms holding us. You know, but they're there. And so just feeling the furniture underneath our bodies, you're like, the earth is doing that right now. Unasked. The Dalai Lama said, the roots of all goodness lie in the soil of appreciation for goodness. Meaning that as we appreciate goodness, we more and more can perceive the incredible web of goodness that's around us. There's another pith quote, what appreciate appreciates. What we notice and you know, have some good feelings toward, we will then notice more. It's like that phenomenon of when you begin to be aware of yellow cars. They aren't as common as some other colors, but if you begin noticing yellow cars, suddenly there's more yellow cars than you realized. And it's that way with anything that we appreciate. We get more of it. It begins to be more available. So there's this guy named Robert Emmons, who is a PhD in psychology and professor at UC Davis. And he is known to be the world's leading scientific expert on gratitude. And this is a little quote from him. Not so little, this is a little reading from him. I've been studying the effects of gratitude on physical health, on psychological well-being, and on relationships with others. In a series of studies, my colleagues and I help people systematically cultivate gratitude, usually by keeping a gratitude journal in which they regularly record the things for which they're grateful. Gratitude journals and other gratitude practices often seem so simple and basic. In our studies, we often have people keep gratitude journals for just 3 weeks. And yet the results have been overwhelming. We've studied more than 1,000 people from ages 8 to 80 and found that people who practice gratitude consistently report a host of benefits. Stronger immune systems, less bothered by aches and pains, lower blood pressure, sleep longer, higher levels of positive emotions, more joy and pleasure, more optimism and happiness, more forgiving, more outgoing. He says, my definition of gratitude has two components. First, it's an affirmation of goodness. We affirm that there are good things in the world, gifts and benefits we receive. This doesn't mean that life is perfect. It doesn't ignore complaints, burdens, and hassles. But when we look at life as a whole, gratitude encourages us to identify some amount of goodness in our life. The second part of gratitude is figuring out where that goodness comes from. We recognize the sources of this goodness as being outside ourselves. We can appreciate positive traits in ourselves, but gratitude acknowledges a humble dependence on others, including animals and the earth. We acknowledge that other beings or even higher powers of your spiritual mindset give us many gifts, big and small, to help us achieve the goodness in our lives. So gratitude, besides being simply a practice that can uplift us and nourish, kind of just give us more space and resilience as we travel life, is a social, it's a social emotion. It helps us feel more connected. In fact, a researcher theorized that we developed our capacity for appreciation because it supports connection and collaboration, which we needed in order to survive. So it gives us this realization, this sense of like, oh my gosh, we really are a web. We really are all together in this. I am fully supported by the earth I sit on and the air I breathe in every moment. And so many beings, so many good, caring beings, you know, in all their ways, including, you know, someone in Korea right now sewing the buttons on a blouse that I'm going to buy, you know, in 6 months, you know, like there's so much interaction and interwebliness going on in all of us. And gratitude puts us in touch with that. And that's actually really good for our sense of self-worth, you know, to realize we're not isolated and alone and inadequate, but we're just part of a web. And each time we contribute to, you know, the well-being of somebody else, even with just a smile at a grocery clerk, we're contributing this goodness to the web. And each time we're grateful for it, we're acknowledging it. So the big obstacle to appreciation, I would say, this may be saying the same thing in three different ways, but there's three. I call it trivializing. I noticed for myself, I'd heard of gratitude practice for years, but I didn't really bother with it because it seemed like a hallmark kind of a behavior, you know, like it just didn't seem serious enough for me. And also because it can be done so easily, you know, like it doesn't have to be a big epic practice. It can be something that we just do, you know, three things good from my day or one thing good from my day that I jot down in a journal in 15 seconds at the end of the day. It doesn't have to be big or take a lot of time. But what the mind can do with that is trivialize it and then not do the practice. What this guy Emmons, the world expert, I forget his name, Robert Emmons, he says the two main obstacles to appreciation are forgetfulness, which is actually makes sense. I mean, forgetfulness is also why mindfulness is hard, because mindfulness is a natural, we can be aware, and we are aware often without any Buddhist practice or anything, but we forget that it's a choice. And so we can spend a whole day lost in thought. So forgetfulness, and he also mentions lack of mindfulness. When we're mindful, we're much more likely to be grateful. We're seeing, we're smelling, you know, our senses are employed when we're mindful, and we can really, like, have you ever peeled a banana and before you like eat it or cut it up and put it on your cereal, just smelled it? You know, it's things like that that can happen with mindfulness, and they're so deeply mundane and ordinary, and yet they are, you know, they can evoke appreciation and wonder even. So whether it's trivializing or forgetting or a lack of mindfulness, those are the big kind of obstacles to having an appreciation practice. And it's almost heartbreaking to me that we have those kinds of obstacles, because the practice is so simple and so profound in terms of what it can do for our ease and our well-being, that it's just, you know, it's a shame that we have these challenges with gratitude practice. And so, again, making the practice easy and fun and finding ways to make it accessible. So what I want to do now is just give you a list of some different practices. I'll tell you ones I've done, and then I'll tell and what I'm doing presently, and then I'll tell you a list from this guy, Robert Emmons. So for myself, I'm the oldest of five kids. We've all been adults for a long time, but we still are connected amazingly and wonderfully. And I have one sister. And we have very different lives, and I barely see her, but she had the idea that we text each other gratitudes. And so now, for, I'd say, a couple of years, or maybe even longer than that, just at the end of the night, part of our routine before we go to sleep is we text each other three things we're grateful for. So having a gratitude buddy, is really nice. It's just really nice. You can immediately sense, you know, the aspect of gratitude that's connecting. It's been very connecting for my sister and me. So that's one way. There's also, as I mentioned, finding a place in your day that you can remember, whether that's pulling into your driveway or brushing your teeth or having your coffee or a moment before you eat your dinner or whatever, where you deliberately take time, you just begin to habituate it because it's in the same place each day, to review a few things about the day that you're grateful for in your mind. I've kept gratitude journals. For me, I can't, it's too many books by my bedside. I can't deal with another journal. So that one didn't work for me, but it very well could work for you, where you just write down something you're grateful for. I'm hoping that you're getting the idea of how simple this can be. The other one I do, though, and that I cultivated out of desperation, because I am a person like many, but not all, so you may or may not relate to this, who sometimes wakes up in the night. Sometimes I have insomnia. I wake up in the night and my mind has already like activated my nervous system and gotten me all freaked out about something. And it's really challenging in those middle of the night activation moments. It's really challenging to kind of get reoriented. And what I learned was, it's like too hard to write something down or, you know, just kind of blandly think about things I'm grateful for. It's just too hard. So what I've discovered is, if I hold on to five fingers one at a time, the fingers ground the practice. They ground it in the body and they count, right? One hand is five. So just using five fingers to name five things I'm grateful for. And that for a long time for me was pretty much anything that I could think of in the night that I, about my life or in the world, you know, grateful for Thich Nhat Hanh, anything. And that was great. And then over time, I was able to refine it so that it's more something in the present moment that I'm grateful for, which is helpful for just kind of bringing the prefrontal cortex back on board. But and it all works, anything you can think of. And it's good also sometimes to think of the small things, as I've mentioned earlier. And I'll share a couple of wonderful poems at the end tonight that bring that in. And just as an aside, I learned later after finding this on my own, I learned later that holding our fingers connects to all different kinds of acupressure points and can really, it's a whole practice in a Japanese practice called Jinshin Jitsu, Jinsen. I'm sorry, I don't have it up right now, apologies. But if you Google Japanese hand practice, you'll find it. And it's, and so anyway, it's out there and it's really cool. So that's something I do. I want to share with you some other practices. And this is the list from Robert Emmons. One, keep a gratitude journal. Establish a daily practice in which you remind yourself of gifts, grace, benefits, and good things you enjoy. Set aside time on a daily basis to recall moments of gratitude associated with ordinary events, your personal attributes, or valued people in your life. Gives you the potential to interweave a sustainable life theme of gratefulness. Two, remember the bad. To be grateful in your current state, it's helpful to remember the hard times that you once experienced. When you remember how difficult life used to be and how far you've come, you set up an explicit contrast in your mind, and this contrast is fertile ground for gratefulness. Next, use visual reminders, because two primary obstacles to gratefulness are forgetfulness and a lack of mindful awareness. Visual reminders can serve as cues to trigger thoughts of gratitude. So if you've heard me talk before, I'm a fan of sticky notes, and I use them. I have them around to remind me of my intentions. And so, you know, just something somewhere around you that well, you'll notice it each day to remind you to practice gratitude can be really helpful. Make an intention to practice gratitude. He also recommends to go through the motions. If you go through grateful motions, the emotion of gratitude can be triggered. Grateful motions include smiling, saying thank you, and writing letters of gratitude. But I also think that's a general, in my experience, that's a general good piece of advice for any of these practices. They may feel dry. You know, sometimes when we practice gratitude, it just gets like repetitive and dull. And that can be that way with metta and compassion and equanimity phrases too. But whatever we're practicing with, it's okay if it gets dry. Like sometimes when we're planting seeds in the garden, where it can get boring too, but still we're planting the seeds and the flowers and vegetables grow. So it's okay if it gets boring. You know, it's still a worthy practice. And there are ways to simplify it or change it up. And you know, that's all cool too. But going through the motions is valuable. So those are some ideas. And then just how can you make it easy and fun for yourself so that it becomes a trait rather than a state? Okay, so one of the things that research on gratitude has shown is that if we share I want to make sure that this is possible. Yes. If we share what we're grateful for with others, it helps us feel more connected. So with that in mind, I wonder if you'd be willing to type in one or two things that you're grateful for, small, medium, or large, into the chat, and I'll read them aloud. Eve Decker, oh, this practice, yes. Today is the 1 year anniversary of being gratefulness partners for Marta and I, beautiful. And sharing with everyone. I'm grateful for you, Eve, and our Sangha. Thank you. I'm grateful for you and our Sangha too. Grateful for my family. Yes. Turning jump rope for fifth graders. You go, Phil. Grateful for the yellow daffodils in my garden. Grateful for good friends. Grateful for my brother's birthday today, Pi Day. Grateful for peace. Grateful for my daughter being home on spring break. That's so sweet. Grateful for this Sangha, especially Eve. Oh, thank you. Grateful for supportive friends. I'm grateful for springtime. I'm grateful for my home and my pets. My dog, for recovery and the 12 steps. Yay. For swimming in an outdoor pool. For books that carry down wisdom. Me too. Grateful for my almost 100-year-old dad. Wow. Happy birthday to your dad when that comes. Grateful for the wonderful movie I saw last night, Perfect Days. Oh, I really want to see that. I'm glad to get that recommendation. Grateful for my partner, my cat Lily, my family. Sweet. Grateful for running water and flushing toilets. Yay. I do gratitude journal daily, and so does my 21-year-old daughter. That's fantastic. Grateful for toilet paper. Me too. The Dharma, good roads and garbage trucks, for plentiful clean air from all the trees. Grateful for the glowing sunset, walking home the day before yesterday, yummy food and music. I saw Perfect Days movie. It's a slow movie, so I need a lot of patience to watch it. Okay, well, patience, you know, Buddha says is the supreme virtue. So it's a good way to cultivate that. Sounds like a fun way. Grateful for the mudita, appreciative joy of hearing everyone's gratitudes. Totally. All my many friends. Grateful to live so close to the ocean. Yes, me too. Grateful for chocolate. I like the idea of sharing gratitude with a partner. Yes, it's a great fun way to do it. And it's accountability too. Grateful for Zoom meetings to share wisdom. Yes, how fortunate we are. Grateful for friendliness. Oh my God, me too. Such a beautiful energy. My cat resting on my chest right now. Grateful for that spring will soon be here. I know it seems to be peeking around the corner. You're in California. Grateful for my wonderful husband. Beautiful. Grateful for physical safety. Yeah. That's a nice one to make conscious. It's good for the limbic brain to hear that. Grateful for my physical safety. All right. So finishing up. Grateful for physical activity, walk, yoga, gym. Yes. Lovely. I'm grateful for the spirit of Oakland and all the positivity here in spite of it all. Oh, that's beautiful. That's how it is, right? Roses and thorns. It's always that way. Grateful for the goofy squirrels in my yard. This breath. Delight in song of birds, the insight of the wise woman's words. Oh, thank you for all this kindness, and thank you for sharing these. And I know that there are many, many, many more that are unspoken. And I wonder if you, like me, can feel the uplift, you know, like Zach said, the mudita, the appreciative joy of hearing everyone's gratitudes and how it connects us. It's really quite something, isn't it? Yeah. Okay. So I want to share a couple poems with you. I think I have time to do a couple poems and a song. So this is from David White. It's called Everything is Waiting for You. Did I read this to you when I was here 2 weeks ago? I don't think I did. Okay, good. Everything is Waiting for You by David White. Your great mistake is to act the drama as if you were alone. As if life were a progressive and cunning crime with no witness to the tiny hidden transgressions. To feel abandoned is to deny the intimacy of your surroundings. Surely even you at times have felt the grand array, the swelling presence, and the chorus crowding out your solo voice. You must note the way the soap dish enables you, or the window latch grants you freedom. Alertness is the hidden discipline of familiarity. The stairs are your mentor of things to come. The doors have always been there to frighten you and invite you. And the tiny speaker in the phone is your dream ladder to divinity. Put down the weight of your aloneness and ease into the conversation. The kettle is singing even as it pours you a drink. The cooking pots have left their arrogant aloofness and seen the good in you at last. All the birds and creatures of the world are unutterably themselves. Everything is waiting for you. And then to inspire you, inspire myself to, inspire all of us to seek or continue with or return to some sort of a deliberate, intentional appreciation practice, I want to share with you a little, I guess it's a poem from the folk singer Carrie Newcomer. She's very wonderful. Look her up. She's got great, great songs. But this she did not put to music, and it's called Three Gratitudes. Every night before I go to sleep, I say out loud three things that I'm grateful for. All the significant, insignificant, extraordinary, ordinary stuff of my life. It's a small practice and humble, and yet I find I sleep better, holding what lightens and softens my life ever so briefly at the end of the day. Sunlight and blueberries, good dogs and wool socks, a fine rain, a good friend, fresh basil, my father's good health, my daughter's new job. The song that always makes me cry, always at the same part, no matter how many times I hear it. Decent coffee at the airport, and your quiet breathing. The stories you told me, the frost patterns on the windows, English horns and banjos, wood thrush and June bugs, the smooth glassy calm of the morning pond, an old coat, a new poem, my library card, and that my car keeps running despite all the miles. And after three things, more often than not, I get on a roll and I just keep going. I keep naming and listening until I lie grinning, blankets pulled up to my chin, awash with wonder at the sweetness of it all. Okay. So any thoughts, questions? What was the impact of this reflection for you this evening of reflecting on appreciation and gratitude? Welcome. And that's fine too, to just kind of be in the moment. Okay. So 1969 says in the chat, "When I'm not feeling good, I do gratitude journal. And just like the poem, by the end of it, I feel a lot better." Thank you for sharing that. That's fantastic. Hilda, are you raising your hand? No? Okay. Got it. Okay, well, I think I have time to share a song with you, a gratitude song. This song, I'm going to share the lyrics so you can see them. Let's see. This song is called "My Grateful Heart." And it was written by Laura Fannin for the Threshold Choirs, which are choirs of predominantly women who sing at the bedsides of the dying. Are you seeing that? Okay. So this is sung at the bedsides of the dying, and it's also good to be sung for us, we're all dying, but wherever we are in our health journey at the moment, this is good for us too, to remind us that when we're practicing gratitude, we have a perspective that's wider and more nourishing than what our, you know, negativity bias brain will have us obsess on. Oh, I just have to make sure that the sound is set to the, yeah, sorry about that. Okay. My grateful heart, so filled with years of living, memories flow by me like petals on a stream. My grateful heart forgives so many sorrows, brings peace that lasts forever, illuminates the dream. My grateful heart, so filled with years of living, memories flow by me like petals on a stream. My grateful heart forgives so many sorrows, brings peace that lasts forever, illuminates the dream. All right, my friends, wishing you good rest tonight and a good week full of appreciative joy, appreciative gratitude. Thanks for being here. Good night.
Thank you for listening. To learn how you can support the teachers and Dharma Seed, please visit dharmaseed.org/donate.